Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It's just really hard, but I tend to be a pretty real person about situations. And I remember when I pulled into my driveway that night, and with everything in me, it was so hard because I just felt like I'm not going to see him again. And at that point, I really didn't know much other than this chaos had happened earlier that day. We have indication that there might have been more to this than what we know.
On the evening of February 28, 2019, the Thurston County Sheriff's Office responded to a call from a woman in Tenino, Washington. She stated that her neighbor, 20-year-old Matthew Anfelt, was at her door behaving oddly. He said that his family had either been injured or killed, and that someone was after him. She then observed Matthew run across her yard, jump the fence, and run out onto a busy highway, causing multiple vehicles to stop or swerve to avoid hitting him. Matthew jumped on the back of a truck that was traveling west. Later, he jumped off of the truck after it had traveled a couple miles down the road. This is where more witnesses saw Matthew, still acting paranoid and afraid inside a local Speedway grocery store in Grand Mound, Washington. After that, Matthew disappeared, never to be seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 244 of The Vanished, part one of Matthew Anfelt's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 20-year-old Matthew Anfelt was a vibrant young adult who had big dreams. He had a passion for music and hoped to be a successful artist someday.
Some crazy shit going on in this world. That's why. We just need a change.
We just need a change. We just need a change.
Growing up, he was also a talented member of the wrestling team at school. We spoke to Matthew's mom, Sarah, and she told us about Matthew's childhood and personality.
He was always such a fun-loving, carefree type of boy. He has a brother and sister, and he's the middle child, so he was extremely close to both sides. He was sort of the glue between the two, given the age gap. He was always saying funny things or doing funny things. He was extremely passionate about life, and he was very literal. He took everything in life for face value and then would analyze it. Always wanted to make people smile, very loving, very giving of himself all the way through his childhood and into early adulthood. He was very passionate about wrestling from the age of 6 on up through high school. He then became, in his later teenage years, he became passionate about music and making music. He just loved life. He struggled with a lot of things. You know, Matthew was just this very unique individual that just loved everybody. You know, there wasn't many that he didn't like. It took a lot for you to get him to that point. It was very unconditional with people. He wanted to see the best in people. Sometimes that was sort of his downfall because he didn't want to think people were bad.
We also spoke to Matthew's great-grandmother, Shirley, who has fond memories of Matthew growing up.
Oh, my. Matthew was a love. There, in fact, I just ran across some neat pictures of him. Well, one in particular, when we were living up in Alaska, I don't think he was more than 3. And he and his sister and his brother, we were all sitting on the sofa, wrapped up in a blanket, all snuggling, watching TV. And it just really touched my heart. Other times I remember with Matthew, I had to be careful. He loved candy. And if he knew I had candy in the house, he'd find it. I could hide it in the very topmost cupboard. And lo and behold, I walked in the kitchen and there he was up on the counter getting candy. And also later on in years, one of his favorite things was to look at me and grin from ear to ear and say, "Oh, Grandma, I love you. You spoil me really bad." Matthew was such a happy, snuggly child. It just warms my heart when I think of him. And I miss him horribly. When they moved down from Alaska, Sarah took him to go to start in school. I guess that when they pulled in, and of course, up in Alaska, it was a very small school. They just stood there and said, "Where are all these kids coming from?" But Matthew fitted right in, and it wasn't long before he was wrestling, and he was such a strong, he had concentration. When he wanted something, he went for it, and he got it. But he adjusted well in school. And I also found Matthew to be a very, very intelligent young man. He blew my mind one day. I was taking him for swimming lessons. We were talking about a math problem. He just rattled it right off. You know, he could figure stuff in his head fast, and he was very focused. He was focused on when he played soccer, and he grew up being very focused as into his teenage years with the wrestling. I went to as many of his wrestling matches as I could. However, I was living 300 miles away, so only if I got to come over on the times he was wrestling. We went swimming a couple times. He tried to teach me or show me how because I couldn't swim. He was always happy, and I could always, always know I would get a hug when I saw Matthew.
While Matthew seemed to have a promising future with talents in various different areas, Sarah told us that he eventually fell in with the wrong crowd.
He started making some pretty poor choices, got himself into the world of addiction, and really struggled. You know, for me, watching him, it just wasn't who he was as a person. He was always very much, "I don't like drugs. I don't like any of that. I don't want to be that person." And he fell into that hole, so to speak. And for a couple of years, he really struggled. He had went to treatment a couple times, got himself into trouble. I always felt like he really wanted different, I think, like most addicts, and was really beating himself up over some of the choices that he'd made in his life. And about 4 months before, he had actually went to live with my sister in September 2018. It was really hard for me to watch. And he started turning his life around probably about November, started really, you know, he was working, he was paying his bills, he was more positive, he was really showing signs that this was it. He didn't want that lifestyle anymore. He knew he had to make a choice in life.
Matthew's parents are divorced, and while we didn't have the opportunity to speak with his father, we wanted to add some context to the core of Matthew's issues. Matthew's father has a history of mental illness and substance abuse, and he didn't play an active role in Matthew's life. As Matthew was in the process of turning his life around and deciding what he wanted to do, something frightening happened just months before he disappeared.
In December, right before Christmas, it was December 22nd, I got a call from my sister. We were getting ready for a Christmas party, and I found out that Matthew, on his way home, from what he says, he was walking home in Lacey to my sister's late at night from a coworker's place, and he was jumped and assaulted by three individuals. They carved "kill" in his chest and really beat him up. I found this out the next morning when he came. I had my sister bring him, of course, right away to me. And he was just so traumatized, you know, that anybody would do this. He kept saying, "Mom, I don't, you know, I've done some bad things, but I don't understand." And at that point, he'd been sober for probably about 30 days. And I kept pushing him to go to the doctor. I kept pushing him to go to the hospital and get checked out because he did have the marks with the kill on his chest. And his face was beat up. He had some road rash. He had cuts all over his arms and chest and stomach. He just kept saying to me, "I don't know who did it, but Mom, I'm scared for my family." And I had to make that tough decision that I felt like I had to back off a little bit, let him be an adult and make this choice. I was obviously scared. And with his sobriety and just mental health, I felt like I couldn't push him to do, you know, go to the police or any further than what I had.
After the attack in December, Matthew continued to work on his sobriety. Sarah was hopeful about his future.
I will tell you, I know a lot of people talk about the drug scene and they bring that up. And I remember early January, him calling me, and he was so excited because, you know, he was doing outpatient. He had had his first clean UA. And I told him, "Well, you need to get a copy of that for me. I want that for my wall." He laughed. And so he called me a couple of days later and he said, "I asked my counselor for the copy of that drug screen." And he laughed at me and I said, "No, you don't know my mom. She really wants a copy of it." So I did later find that within his stuff and actually have that on my wall. So, you know, I know that he was really trying to stay on the straight and narrow. And as his mom, I had watched him deteriorate. I had watched, you know, my son who I knew. The one thing about Matthew is that he was always honest, no matter if it was going to get him in trouble or not. And he always owned up to the things that he did if he got cornered. You know, I had the school tell me one time, you know, it's crazy to us because he doesn't seem to fit in with the crowd that he hangs out with. Because if he gets caught doing something that he's not supposed to, he'll say, "Yeah, I'm doing this." And they would take him to the principal's office or wherever. And he would just take his punishment and he would own up to it. You know, he was never combative or anything like that. And that's who he was. He knew what he was doing was wrong. So when he changed this last time, I really felt just by the way that he presented himself and carried himself, the way he spoke again, he called me, we talked for a couple hours about life and what he wanted. I just really felt that it was it. And then when he had the clean UA, I knew that he was really trying because that was the first time in quite a long time that he had been able to do that.
Sarah told us about a special event that occurred shortly before Matthew disappeared.
In January, his brother had left to move to Alaska. We used to live up there. His brother had moved back up to Alaska about a year and a half prior to January 2019. And Matthew had gotten himself into trouble the night before that my oldest left. So he never got to say goodbye. And he used to tell me, "I regret so much that I wasn't there when Anthony left because I didn't get to say goodbye to my brother." So with him doing well, I decided to go ahead and surprise him for his birthday his birthday was January 27th. And I think it was the 25th of January, 2019. I flew my oldest son down here without any of the family knowing. And we held a surprise party. And there's video of that that I have. I began to talk to Matthew in front of the family about how proud I was of him. And then my oldest knocked on the door and he was able to go and open up the door and see his brother. You know, right before my oldest had knocked on the door, you know, I told Matthew there was always been a regret you had. Very emotional, very touching. And I feel so blessed to have had that right before everything happened.
Matthew's great-grandmother Shirley told us about the last time she saw him.
The last thing that I heard from him, I couldn't make it over for his surprise birthday party for his 20th birthday. And they were doing a video and Sarah fixed it so I could watch it and hear it. And he walked in and he said, "Grandma's on the video." And he looked up and waved and said, "Hi, Grandma. Happy birthday to you, too." Because my birthday was 3 days later.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Sarah recalled the events that occurred in the weeks prior to Matthew going missing.
So my oldest was here for about 3 weeks. Matthew pretty much never left his side the entire time. So he stayed here. And then when Anthony went back home, I'd say about a week before everything happened, you know, I had taken Matthew home to my sister's because he worked real close to there. Then he showed back up here. So the Tuesday before he went missing, that early morning, I work in Olympia, and that's also near where Matthew was living at the time and working. And I took him in to work very early in the morning, and I sat out in the car while he went in, made sure there was work. They ended up, it was one of those places that you show up very early in the morning and they give you work, or maybe not. And he came out and they had no work for him. So I took him to my sister's and dropped him off. That night, about, I would say, I'm going to guess, so about 9 or 10 o'clock, we live out in a very rural area, probably about 30 minutes from my sister's. That night, pretty late, about maybe 8 and 9, Matthew showed back up here. And I thought it was odd because I'd just taken him home that morning. So he stayed here, which was fine. And then Thursday morning, I got up early to go to work. And I could just feel like, you know, like depression had set in the last couple of days. His work, which was, like I said, a work by day, you know, you go in, ask if they had any work, and then go to work or not go to work. Well, when he stayed out here for the 3 weeks with his brother, he didn't work and they had suspended him. And so he was extremely concerned about his bills and how he was going to pay those.
Sarah could see that the stress Matthew was under was really affecting him. She wanted him to focus on what he needed to do to get beyond this bump in the road that he seemed to be stuck at.
He had graduated from the intensive outpatient treatment that he was involved in for a couple of years, and so he could finally get a normal job. So I just told him Thursday morning when I got up, this was the day he disappeared on February 28th. You know, he was sitting on the end of my couch. I came out, it was probably about 7 o'clock in the morning, and he's sort of sitting there. And I said, you know, Matthew, all I want you to do today is focus on applying for jobs from your phone, looking into jobs, and just don't worry about your bills. I will help you. You're doing the right things in life. So whatever you need from that standpoint, I will help you. Just focus on what you need to do to start your life with a job. I went to walk out the door and he said, I love you, Mom. And he was always known for saying, I love you to everyone. He never skipped a beat with that. And I remember coming back in and looking at him and saying, I love you too, son. And, you know, looking back now, I'm like, did he know something? Did he, you know, just the way that he presented it that morning.
This was the last time that Sarah saw her son. She left home and headed to work. It was later that evening, February 28th, 2019, when Sarah got a phone call letting her know that something was wrong.
I ended up working a little bit later. Then I went to a friend's house to have dinner with them and received a phone call that night. I would say probably about 5:45, 6 o'clock. From my daughter, and she said, Mom, the sheriff's department is here. They're surrounding our house, and Matthew's gone. And I said, what do you mean Matthew's gone? And she said, I don't know, Mom. I don't know what's going on, but the sheriffs are here. And she started talking about bodies and just sort of, she was frantic too, and just sort of all over the place. And so I said, put the sheriff's department on now. And so she put the sheriff's department on, and they started explaining to me that he had ran to the neighbor's house screaming about his family and that people were after him. And then he'd run into the road, stopping all traffic. And so they had received several 911 calls. I said, well, I need to call him. I'm going to let you go. I need to call him. And the sheriff said, Sarah, you can't call him. And I said, why can't I call him? Well, because his phone is in the house. He left with no shoes. Now, this was February. And anyone that knew my son, he didn't leave without his, you know, nice shoes, clothes. He was very much about his appearance. He certainly wasn't a big avid camper or it just wasn't him. And I said, what do you mean he left without his phone? What do you mean he didn't have shoes on? We don't know, Sarah. We're trying to figure it out, but he doesn't have his phone on him. So I get in the car. And I get here and I stop at the store because I later find out that he had ended up 2 miles down the road at a little convenience store doing the same thing somehow, had went in there, was yelling that he was worried about his family or they had been murdered and that people were after him. I was told that he had blood on his face. And while the clerk was on the phone with 911, he took off the side door, and that's the last time anybody's ever seen him.
Hearing this news, Sarah left her friend's house and rushed home. That's when she began speaking with witnesses to piece together what had happened that evening.
when I came home, I realized the seriousness of it. And as things progress, you know, there's so many things that don't make sense. And I will be the first to say, you know, did he get back into drugs? Did he have a drug-induced episode? Because from what I understood, he had went to the neighbors. He had knocked on their door or was, you know, really pounding on their door. The gal was home alone. She opened up the door. He was crying. He was frantic. And he was saying, my family, they're after me. Help me. So she was a little bit freaked out. And she shut the door to try to get control of her dogs. She grabbed the phone and she called 911. When she opened up the door, she saw Matthew running across her yard and jump over the fence and go out into the highway. Now, we live on a 50 to 55 mile an hour highway. He stopped all traffic going in both directions. And he was running up and down between cars saying, my family's been murdered. Now, we're not sure if he was saying my family was murdered in that moment or if he was saying they're going to be murdered. But the story was that he was yelling, my family's going to be murdered. Help me. They're after me. We know he had blood on his face in the roadway. The one consistent thing that I've been told throughout this is that he was genuinely scared. They weren't really scared of him, but there was a look in his eyes that he was terrified. She had told me, the neighbor, that she watched him. There, you know, all traffic is stopped, and there was a white utility truck that was headed in the store's direction. And he had jumped on the back of that. We're presuming that's how he got 2 miles down the road so quickly to the little store. What I know is that basically, while the sheriffs were at my house, he was at the store. So they missed him by just minutes. They didn't realize that that's where he was at. And so he made it down to the store. We did have a witness that came forward that said that they were inside the store and saw him trying to get into the truck. They had pulled in sideways alongside the highway in front of the store, and he was trying to get into the truck. And then they basically got the door shut to the truck and they took off, and he came running into the store saying, my family has been murdered. I need help. They're after me. And the witness had told me that he was genuinely scared and he kept trying to go behind the counter to hide. And then finally they got him to sit down. He was very panic ridden. He was crying, shaking, sweating, had blood on his face. And while the clerk was on the phone with 911, he took off out the side door. And so not the main entrance. He took off out the side door, which would lead to their back property area that has multiple buildings and stuff like that. And it's all fenced in. From there, we don't know what happened. To this day, he just simply vanished.
Matthew had spent that day with his sister and her boyfriend. Sarah went to her daughter to see if she had any insight into Matthew's mental state earlier in the day.
So when I talked to my daughter, because my daughter was and her boyfriend were the only ones that were here when this all took place, I asked her, I said, you know, what happened? What's the timeline? You know, and I knew that they had gone to Longview to go bowling and stuff and hang out, and they had taken him with them. She said he was fine all day. We had fun. He was being his goofy self. She had videos of him from that day. He didn't look like he was on drugs. He was just being his normal goofy self, laughing and smiling and whatnot. And she said, we got home about 4 p.m. And I want to say that the first 911 call from the neighbors was at 5:17. So within less than an hour and a half, this all takes place.
Sarah explained what their neighborhood looks like and the layout of their home to give us a better understanding of what went down on the day Matthew disappeared.
I think it's really important. People get really confused, I think, because they don't understand the layout here. But basically, most of us are on 5-acre parcels. And everything is pretty spread out. It's a very rural area, lots of land, lots of outbuildings and such. So it's not near town or anything like that. Our house is, we have the main part of the house, then we have a carport, and attached to the other side of that carport is the garage, and off that garage is a room. So my daughter had that room off the garage when this all happened. So you literally had to walk outside to get to that room. So she said when they got home at 4 o'clock, he walked into the main part of the house to change, and she went out to her room, her and her boyfriend. So again, that's out. They went out to the room off the garage. She said that he came out to the room and joined them out there about 15, 20 minutes later. And I said, well, okay, well, how was he? Did he seem like he'd taken drugs while he was in the house? Did he? She said, no, Mom. He laid down on the bed. He asked for a blanket, said he was cold. I gave him a blanket. We just sat there watching a movie or talking or whatever. About 45 minutes to an hour later, he said, hey, you want me to go get my phone in the house and we can watch videos? And my daughter said, yeah, sure. And so he got up, no shoes, and walked outside, which leads into the carport, open carport, and then to the house. So that would have put him walking out about 5:05 to 5:10 from what her timeline is. Again, the first 911 call came in at 5:17 from the neighbors. So very quick this all happened after, because when I asked my daughter, I said, well, how fast did the sheriff's department get here from when Matthew walked out of your room? And she said, probably 15 minutes. That's quick for where we live. That's extremely quick. So for me, it's been a struggle to think that he did drugs when he walked out of a room, because how did he have time to walk, you know, to run across a 5-acre parcel and then run across this yard to the highway? I mean, this all happened in a matter of minutes. And I asked where the phone was when the sheriffs got here, because she really did not know until the sheriffs were surrounding the house. And she walked out and saw them there, and they start telling her all this. And she's like, why did you just walk out of my room? And so again, I want to reiterate that when he walked out of her room with no shoes, he walked outside to get to the main part of the house where his phone was charging. I asked her where that phone was. She said it was still charging on the couch. So to me, he never even made it to his phone. Whatever happened, he never made it there. He never got his phone, and he literally left the way he walked out of her room. So no shoes, no coat. He had a Chicago Bulls sweatshirt on, gray sweatpants, and that's it. And February weather, I remember it being very cold that year. It's just extremely hard for me to believe that it was just drugs. It, you know, maybe he was dabbling, but I don't know that that was the complete cause. So as I got the timeline, I started thinking, wait a minute, you know, this just doesn't make sense. He got beat up, killed, carved on his chest 2 months prior. And then this happened with somebody threatening his family, because just like he said when he got jumped, that he was very concerned about his family's safety, but he kept denying that he knew who they were. And the day he went missing, what is he doing? He's, you know, going to the neighbors out in the roadway and at the store telling them, people are after me, help me. He's got blood on his face. He's worried about his family. And in the middle of all this, they had gotten ambulances and fire trucks that were staged at the park and ride local here, thinking that a family had been harmed, and just such a whirlwind.
After Matthew went missing, Sarah began receiving tips about where he could be and what may have happened to him. This is when she was told about a suspicious vehicle in the neighborhood that day.
I had received a tip that there was a white car parked across from our driveway at this time when this all happened. And I later had received a tip that that car had almost hit two people coming through a stop sign and running the stop sign headed towards the freeway. And at first, I didn't link it together. I was the one receiving all the tips for the first week. You know, you're receiving hundreds of calls, tips, messages, everything. When I later put two and two together, I thought, well, who's this white car? I was working from home one day and a car matching this description actually came into my driveway, which we have a little bit of a long driveway. You can see the road, but it's a little bit long. So I came out and my dog ran to the car, and literally when the car saw me come out, they stopped. And then I came off the porch. I had no idea who this car was. They literally backed up and then took off. And it matched the, you know, white car, tinted windows description. And so there are some unanswered questions. And unfortunately, nobody had video that we're aware of except for inside the store. So we're not sure where he went after. Was somebody out there waiting when he did come out? So much is unanswered at this point. I had actually asked for it to be investigated. I don't believe it ever was. I had met with my detective. I think he's his direct supervisor, and my detective, and said, this car needs to be looked into. And I said, I will sit here and go through license plate numbers, names, and see if I know any of them. And I was told that there just wasn't the manpower to do that. There was a body pulled from Scatter Creek. And we actually sit on part of Scatter Creek. And it was a little bit further away from us, but that one scared me. There was a body found, but it was, of course, wasn't him. I had the detective actually call me, bless his heart, because I didn't even know about it. But he said, I just wanted to forewarn you, there was a body found in the woods. This was, shortly after he had gotten assigned to the case finally. And he said, and of course, I just broke. Nobody wants to hear those words. And he said, no, Sarah, it's female. I just want you to know that it wasn't your son before you saw it on media. And so I really appreciated that, because it is hard.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop, with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. In order to get a better idea of what happened on February 28, 2019, we contacted the Thurston County Sheriff's Office and requested an interview with the detective working on Matthew's case. They granted our request and also our request for records. You will hear from the detective in part two. They sent us an extensive file on Matthew's case, detailing what witnesses saw that night and their search efforts for Matthew. This gave us the unique perspective from witnesses while their memories were still fresh in the hours and days after he disappeared. Going over his file, the witnesses who saw him that evening all described that he seemed very frightened. Starting with the neighbor who first saw him, she alerted the police when Matthew began frantically knocking at her door. She knew Matthew as a neighbor, and she had also been his teacher at school. Matthew was knocking at her door so furiously that it startled both her and her dog. She cracked the door slightly to see what was going on. Matthew kept screaming about his family. She described him as scared out of his mind. She told Matthew to stay there because she didn't want to open the door further, because her dog was so startled she was afraid it would bite him. But she promised to call 911. She told the 911 operator that Matthew was either saying his family was dead or injured, and that his eyes looked like black holes. He was yelling that someone was after him. She then witnessed him jump a fence and run out onto Old Highway 99, which is described as a high-speed and busy highway. Cars began to stop or swerve to avoid hitting Matthew. A witness who was driving down the road at the time came upon several vehicles stopped in the road. She assumed that she had come upon an accident. Then she saw Matthew banging on car windows, saying, "My family was killed and they're after me." This confused the motorist, wondering what he had to do with what she assumed was an accident. She described Matthew as being in agony. Matthew then jumped onto the hood of a vehicle and then the back of a utility truck that was headed west toward I-5. Several minutes later, another call came in about 2 miles away from the first one. This was at the speedway. It is believed that he jumped off of the truck in this area. He wouldn't have been able to make it that far on foot in 8 minutes. Witnesses at the speedway described Matthew as sweaty and panicked. Again, he told people in the store that his family was killed and that he needed to hide because people were after him. It was also noted that it looked like he had dried blood around his mouth. One witness who was at the checkout counter when this all occurred described seeing the white truck with utility boxes pull up right in front of the doors to the store. He saw Matthew jump out of the bed of the truck, and it appeared that he tried to get into the cab when the driver pulled away. Then he witnessed Matthew run full speed into the glass door, like he thought it was open, but it wasn't. At first, the man believed that they were about to get robbed due to the level of speed and excitement that Matthew was exhibiting. Matthew opened the door, ran in, and hid behind the checkout counter. He was crying, shaking, and repeating, "They killed my family." The clerk attempted to calm him down and reassure him that things were going to be okay. But that's when Matthew bolted. The witness estimated this encounter to have only lasted about 30 seconds. Matthew exited the store out of the side door to the west of the business, and this is the last time anyone saw Matthew Anfelt. That evening, several officers were searching the area in their patrol cars and on foot, but they couldn't find any trace of Matthew. They found this to be odd that Matthew's panicked behavior had caught the attention of so many people out and about up until the time he left the store. They expected to get more calls about him. Since Matthew disappeared, Sarah has felt that his drug history has impacted how much people care about finding her son. Sarah told us about the search efforts for Matthew.
You know, I've never been dishonest about his drug use. I've always said, yes, my son struggled. But it's sad for me because I've had to really be cautious what I do say, because I know the detective has said it and the PI, that we have to be careful because it takes away from him missing, which absolutely infuriates me, but it's truth, right? If they're an addict, then they're, for some reason, not worth any more. They're not worth anything. It's not worth finding them. You know, I've told people, I have looked at this from every angle. Do I know that he was 100% sober? No, I don't. I don't think that if he had fallen off the, you know, the path, that he had been doing it for very long. You know, he certainly wasn't where he was in 2017. My detective is amazing. I absolutely adore the man. He's a great guy. I believe that he genuinely wants to find answers for me. But I think that he's stuck in this. Let's be real. My son was an addict. Now, he never had any drug charges, but he was an addict, right? And he had gotten into trouble in a short amount of time. And so they knew who he was. And I really believe that that's why they didn't do more in the beginning. Because so the sheriff that showed up at my house, I had never met him. So when Matthew got in trouble, he was actually the arresting officer. And that's how I was introduced to him. So when he gets on the phone and all this is happening with Matthew disappearing, he's like, well, I'm actually the sheriff that arrested your son when he got in trouble a couple of years ago. And I'm like, oh, this is fabulous. So the next morning, less than 24 hours, I called him. I think it was probably about 6-7 o'clock in the morning. And I said, something is wrong. I need to file a missing persons report. This is not my son. And he did. He said, I agree with you, Sarah. So then I started asking about dogs. Now, again, we live in this rural area. Given the situation, whether he was on drugs or someone was after him, he was in crisis. And I was so worried that he was suffering in a field, suffering in an abandoned barn. I'm still not convinced his body may not be out here. When I asked for the dogs, I was told that his sergeant said no. He had already asked for it. That was Friday. Thank God this sheriff, this particular sheriff, had come out. He had went door to door with us, because you have to ask for permission to search anybody's property. And you can't just walk in there. And you can't get a warrant, from what I understand, without a crime. And so we literally were going door to door. We had the police called on us. It was just insane. So he helped in between his calls that weekend. So I didn't have anybody but this sheriff. Thank God for him. You know, I'm very grateful. I couldn't get dogs. I didn't have anybody else. But this sheriff would take time between his calls and come out and go door to door. Monday morning, I went to Thurston County Sheriff's and I said, I met with two detectives. And I said, I need help. I don't even know what to do, because my number was the one that was given out. So I'm the one receiving all the tips, on top of collapsing in between searches, on top of trying, you know, it was absolutely insane. So they said, oh, we'll get someone right in there. We'll get this on Facebook, our Facebook page right away. We'll have a detective contact you tomorrow. That'll be assigned to you. I didn't hear from a detective until Thursday, so a week. And when my detective called me, he said, Sarah, I'm so sorry. I was actually at the hospital because I had received a tip that he might have been taken to the hospital the day he disappeared. And I remember when I got his call, his very first call, I collapsed right in the middle of the hospital, just bawling, because he said, I'm so sorry, Sarah. We dropped the ball. Your case was assigned to a detective on vacation. And so it got lost. And I'm thinking, how does that happen? And he said, but I've got search and rescue dog teams coming out to the area tomorrow morning first thing, and we're going to do searches. That's when I collapsed, because I'd been asking for that and didn't get it for over a week. And it's February weather. My son had no shoes on. He had no phone. Who knows what state of mind he was in, and I couldn't get any help at all.
We know that Matthew left his cell phone behind when he frantically ran out of the house. They checked his phone and were unable to find any leads there. Matthew made no mention to anyone that he had plans on leaving that evening, or that anyone was after him. As Sarah mentioned, on March 7th, 2019, Detective Mickey Hamilton was assigned to Matthew's case. He and another officer went back out to the area where Matthew was last seen, near the speedway, and began looking again, but they found no trace of Matthew or the clothing he was last seen wearing. He called Sarah, and this was the same day that Sarah mentioned she had received a tip that Matthew was at a local hospital. After getting a bit of the runaround due to HIPAA laws, Detective Hamilton was able to confirm that Matthew was not there. This is when Sarah told the detective about another lead she had gotten. A young woman who worked at a local McDonald's had come forward, stating that she attended a party with Matthew on Saturday, March 2nd, at a Motel 6 in the nearby town of Tumwater, Washington, about 16 miles from where he was last seen at the Speedway. Sarah had gone to the Motel 6 and was able to get the name of a man who rented a room on that night and had a party. Sarah also informed the detective that she had gotten several tips on social media that Matthew was sighted in Olympia, but none of those alleged sightings have ever been confirmed. And as far as Sarah was aware, this wasn't a place that he was known to hang out. On March 8, 2019, there was a coordinated search effort in the area of the Speedway. Three cadaver dog teams were brought out to the area that morning. That is when things took a surprising turn. When the detective approached the store owner, he was taken aback when, after asking the owner if they could run the cadaver dogs around to see if they could find Matthew, the owner replied, "Not on our property." The store owner refused to allow any police presence on his property, even after the detective explained that this was not a criminal investigation. They were simply trying to find Matthew. When we spoke to Sarah, she told us more about how this store owner has behaved and how it has hampered the investigation.
I keep being told, well, we can't get warrants without a crime. Okay, but how do you prove a crime if you can't get a warrant? Because we even had the store that he went to, which is a local store. The detective called me. Now, I had went to the store that night and then the next morning. The next morning when I went in there, the owner was in there and he was horrible to me. He was absolutely. Now, Matthew never threatened anybody. He never, you know, destroyed anything, never took anything. He looked at me and said, "I don't need this bullshit." And when I said who I was, and he knew me from being a regular patron in there, I was just floored. Then the detective, when they did the search and rescue, now again, we live on a really busy highway. The detective went in there, went with search and rescue that following Friday morning, and he told them to get off his property. They weren't even allowed to get a scent off the side door where Matthew came out of. That would have taken 5 minutes. They weren't allowed to park on the store property, nothing. And I always thought, you know, he's trying to hide. And he crawled into one of their spots, or maybe he was high and he passed, and they can't get a warrant for that. And the detective was furious. You know, he said, "I've never had a public place not cooperate with a missing person case," but he refused, flat out refused to cooperate with the search and rescue. And they had to park all their cars alongside the busy highway with the dog teams and everything. And they did a couple dog team searches.
Even though they weren't allowed to search the Speedway property for Matthew, the cadaver dogs continued searching the surrounding areas and didn't locate any clues. On March 13th, 2019, Detective Hamilton began looking into this lead that Matthew was seen by a young woman at a party on March 2nd, 2 days after he was last seen. The following day, he found her working at the McDonald's. She told the detective that she was 100% certain that she had seen Matthew on the 2nd. She remembered him coming in around 8:30 p.m. with a friend she knows only by the name of Sam. She had never met Matthew, but the man told her his name was, in fact, Matthew. They told her that they were going to a party for Sam's birthday at a local Motel 6 and asked her if she wanted to go. She agreed to accompany them to the party after her shift was over. The young woman couldn't remember if Matthew came into the McDonald's with Sam or if he waited in the car, and she met him once she was done work. 2 weeks had passed by this time, and she had only put the pieces together when she saw a missing flyer for Matthew. She also said that at the party, Matthew, Sam, and others were all doing dabs, which she explained to the detective as being hash oil. She noticed that Matthew was hallucinating and saying something bad happened to his family. Others at the party told her that he was also on mushrooms, but that he was fine. It wasn't the first time he had taken them. She described him as wearing a black hoodie and black sweatpants. and that he kept the hoodie up the entire time. For reference, Matthew was last seen wearing a black and gray Chicago Bulls sweatshirt and gray sweatpants on the day of his disappearance. This witness claims that she left the party with Sam, and the person she believed to be Matthew Anfelt stayed behind. When the detective inquired further about who Sam was, she explained she only knows him from coming into her place of employment, and that she doesn't have a last name or any contact information for him. But she described him as a tall white guy with a slender build, blonde hair, and blue eyes. When reviewing the footage from inside the McDonald's on March 2nd, the detective identified who he believes the witness thought was Matthew, along with another man, most likely the one that the witness described as Sam. When Sarah viewed the footage, she didn't believe that was her son, Matthew. They got in touch with the man who had rented the motel room for a party that night, and he said he rented it for a party for his girlfriend's son named Sam. This Sam did recall meeting a girl at McDonald's that night, but he didn't recognize the photos of Matthew Anfelt. While this lead seemed to sound credible at first, since the witness remembered the person she thought was Matthew talking about someone hurting his family, from all the other witnesses and the video footage, if there was a Matthew at the party that night, it doesn't sound like it was Matthew Anfelt. With the early search efforts turning up empty, Sarah was thinking about this problem she was having with the issue of needing search warrants to obtain certain information, or to search properties where the owner would not give permission. She thought of a way that they could possibly work around this inability to get a warrant, because there's no evidence of a crime. What if she could report the assault that Matthew was a victim of just a couple months earlier?
It's just really frustrating. So I had told the detective, I said, fine. A report was never filed for the assault. I'll go to Lacey Police and file a police report. And that's a crime. We know we've been able to prove that something happened to Matthew, right? And I even have video that I found that he had told me he deleted that he had posted on one of the sites. I found it in his phone after I got his phone back. Somebody had responded to him with the video, and it's of him cut up. And he put on there, got jumped on my way home. The timelines all match up, right? And I even told people, you know, before I got that, I said, you know, because people, oh, he did it to himself. And I said, I'm not going to say that he didn't. I don't know. I know drug addicts can do crazy things, but we've been able to prove, like, basically what he told me on the timeline, we've been able to prove has been pretty accurate of that day. So I told the detective, I said, I think maybe we need to focus on the criminal part, which happened 2 months prior, and see if the same names that we've gotten through this come up in that one. You know, then you can get your warrant because you have a crime. When I went to Lacey Police Department to file, they blew me off. They said, your son's not here. I said, I know he's not. All the more reason why this needs to be filed with you guys. And they said, no, they said that was up to my detective. And I thought, oh, well, how is that up to my detective? So then the detective said, well, did they tell you if anybody called 911 that day? I told them. And they said, no, they basically just shooed me away. So then I had talked to the detective because I had been told that you can go and meet with the FBI and ask for a meeting with them. And if they feel that they're substantial enough, that they will get involved. I asked him about that. And he said that he believed that they probably wouldn't help me unless I was. And I said, well, I want to put a timeline together, have it all, because I've got information from the PIs, the detectives, my own, you know, investigation that I've done, and put that all together for them to see it. So they're not just getting a bunch of this and this and this. I think one of the biggest barriers has been that the detective is, Matthew's not his only case. These cases, it's all about the details.
That brings us to the end of part one of Matthew Anfelt's story. In part two, we're going to explore more leads that they've uncovered, speak with Detective Hamilton, and try to figure out what may have happened to Matthew. If you have any information about the disappearance of Matthew Anfelt, please call the Thurston County Sheriff's Office at 360-704-2740 or contact Detective Hamilton directly at 360-786-5279. You can follow Matthew's story on Facebook at Help Find Matthew Anfelt.
It's frustrating for the family because, and they see things on TV, you know, and people are found within one episode, and they have all kinds of resources brought to bear on different cases or whatever, and so people have the high expectations of what we are able to do compared to reality, and it can be frustrating for them when they actually experience it, and it's not quite as easy as it's made to seem sometimes.
Matthew was a very compassionate, very, very, very loving. And I know that people say, oh yeah, you can see that now. But was he really? Yes, he was. And he was kind. He loved his animals. In fact, I was over at Sarah's for a while in the last few months. He had a favorite cat. The little cat come and slept with me while I was there, and it made me feel like it was Matthew. I just can't explain the love of that Matthew really had and wanted to give. And I know he was struggling for a good life. He loved his music.
That brings us to the end of episode 244. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Tune in tomorrow for part 2 of Matthew's story. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments. But business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.